So we saw in the last session that instead of reacting with anger, and anger tends to be based on this idea of cognitive fusion, a false perspective, when we identify others and ourselves with their behaviours, instead of reacting with anger, then if we want emotional balance, we would then rather respond with compassion. So in this session, I'd like to have a look at compassion. And we talked about four qualities that we can develop in terms of cultivating this emotional balance. Which are called these four immeasurables. And here the word immeasurable is meaning that we are to cultivate these qualities towards immeasurable sentient beings, meaning towards everyone. And the first of those was loving kindness. In Sanskrit, maitri, in Pali, metta. And loving kindness was defined simply as the wish for ourselves and others to be happy. Or another way of saying that is the wish for ourselves and others to have happiness and its causes. So when we talk about immeasurable loving kindness, it means that the wish for all sentient beings to have happiness and its causes. And the second quality is compassion, or in Sanskrit and Pali, karuna. And compassion in general, of course, is the wish for ourselves and others to be free of suffering and its causes. So immeasurable compassion is simply the wish for all sentient beings to be free of suffering and its causes. Now, these two qualities are, of course, very closely related. And in general, it's said that we are to develop these qualities in stages. Meaning, first, to develop these qualities towards people close to us, because they're the most easy. So to develop loving kindness and compassion to, you know, family and friends and so forth, the so-called friends. Then once we're comfortable with that, we can extend it out to people that we don't know very well, the so-called strangers. Once we're cultivating it towards them, we can start to extend it out to people we find a little bit difficult, the so-called enemy, the people we maybe dislike and so forth, and then eventually expand it out to everybody, all sentient beings. But I think, so traditionally in the texts it was described in those stages. But I think in our modern society we need to add one more step to this process, right at the beginning. Again, because I think in our modern society we have this epidemic of low self-esteem and self-hatred. We do a lot of this cognitive fusion and so forth. So I think that we need to begin with ourselves. We need to develop loving kindness and compassion for ourselves first. Because if we're not kind and compassionate toward ourselves, we're not going to be able to extend those qualities out to others. So for many of us, that's probably where we need to begin with this cultivation of loving kindness and compassion. The third quality is empathetic joy, or in Sanskrit Pali, mudita. And empathetic joy is a rejoicing in our own and others' virtues and good fortune. And I think, again, this is something very important in our modern society, particularly since we have so much focus on the negative. So therefore we need to balance that by focusing on the positive. So this empathetic joy is simply a rejoicing in our own and others' virtues and good fortune. And this also is a very good antidote to jealousy, because normally when someone else has something good happen to them, we become jealous of them. So instead of being jealous, we can rejoice in their virtues and good fortune. So this is a little bit of empathetic joy. And then we have, lastly, we have equanimity, or in Sanskrit, Pali, viteksha. And equanimity here is developing an unbiased, equal attitude towards everyone. Now, our attitude towards others tends to be very biased, and our attitude towards others tends to come about through self-focus. We tend to have the perspective when we enter into situations of how is this situation affecting me? If we have this sort of perspective, we tend to categorize people into three groups depending on how they affect us. Those people who seem to support me in my happiness, we label friends. Those people around us who don't seem to affect me and my happiness in any way, the so-called strangers. And those people around us who seem to interfere with me and my happiness, maybe even try to cause me suffering, the so-called enemy. So we tend to categorize people into three groups solely from the perspective, how are they affecting me? And then on that basis of that categorization, we have very biased attitudes. Because toward the friends, who we've only labelled that because they seem to support me and my happiness, we have a lot of attachment to them. To the group that we've labelled stranger, solely on the basis they don't seem to be affecting me and my happiness in any way, we have a lot of apathy and indifference. And then to the group that we've labelled enemy, solely on the basis they seem to be interfering with me and my happiness, we often have a lot of hostility, anger and hatred toward them. So we have attachment to friends, apathy to strangers, hostility, anger and hatred towards the difficult people. Equanimity is about overcoming this biased attitude. And equanimity is basically cultivated through understanding we are all equal in terms of wanting to be happy and wanting to be free of suffering. We're all equal in this regard. And so if we can develop this attitude, then we can understand that we're all stuck in the same situation. We're all struggling to be happy. We're all struggling to be free of suffering. And so then we can have developed this equal attitude towards others, this sense of closeness to everyone. Because if we don't develop this, if we have the biased attitude, then it's going to be difficult to develop loving kindness and compassion and empathetic joy towards others. Because to develop these qualities to the so-called stranger, not the ones we've labelled that because they don't affect me and my happiness in any way, not really, because they're not affecting me in any way. I don't really care what happens to them. Loving kindness and compassion to the so-called enemy, no way. In fact, I hope they suffer. They deserve to suffer because they're trying to harm me. And then loving kindness and compassion to the so-called friends, yes, but only as long as they keep saying and doing things that make me happy. So this is, of course, attachment. So therefore, if we can cultivate equanimity, this equal attitude, this sense of closeness to everyone, we can really cultivate those other three qualities towards everyone. So that's a little bit what these four immeasurables are. Any questions about the four immeasurables? Yeah.
And
Right. Yes, I mean, there can be a few things like this. One, of course, in these sorts of situations, it can be that a number of reasons for this. I mean, one can be is sometimes people's motivation for helping the larger community sometimes can be a bit selfish, you know, that they'll give money or so forth. Usually it's when they don't give so much time but they just simply give money. It can be a sign that they just want people to think that they're someone special because they're helping. Of course, much better to do that than not help. And often we have, you know, with, and this is a topic that's going to come up a little bit tomorrow, this idea of being selfish and being versus being selfless. In terms of cherishing others. And so certainly within the Buddhist perspective, we're trying to eliminate this selfish attitude and we're trying to be completely selfless and just help others. But of course that's not so easy to do. And sometimes when the Dalai Lama is speaking in the West in public, where most people are not Buddhist, and he talks about this topic of being unselfish, he says, and he understands for us it's very difficult to be completely unselfish. He says, okay, if you have to be selfish, at least be selfish in a smart way. Now we're selfish in a dumb way, meaning anyone who stands in the way of our happiness, we, you know, get them out of the way. We harm them if they get in our way. That's dumb selfishness, because then they just harm us back. Smart selfishness is understanding that our happiness is dependent on the people around us. So if we help the people around us, they're more likely to help us. So that's smart selfishness. And so therefore, we can begin there, because that's quite easy. You know, it's very ego-friendly, you know, because then people sort of, you know, stroke our ego because we're a nice person now. But at least that's a step in the right direction. And if we do that, the more we do that, the more we will find that simply the joy of giving or helping will far outweigh any sort of reward that we receive in return. And we'll find that over time our motivation will become more and more and more unselfish. Because the reality is, for us to do something now in a completely unselfish way would be almost impossible. Almost impossible. So unfortunately what sometimes people do is they look at the action they're about to do and they go, oh, and it's a good action, they go, oh, I'm being a bit selfish here because I'm sort of hoping to get something in return or getting praise or something. And they say, okay, I'm not going to do it because it's a selfish motivation. I think that would be wrong, because we're never going to begin to do anything. Rather, if we're going to do some good action and we notice some selfish motivation creeping in, try to reduce that as much as possible and still do the positive action. And then over time we'll find that we can reduce more and more of the selfish motivation. So that's one reason why we can end up in this situation. And another reason, of course, is that when we do sort of community work, we're not often directly interacting with people in any, you know, maybe we're just giving out food or something. That's a little bit easier. Whereas, of course, people close to us are the ones that test us most, who push our buttons. So they're the ones that really can test us. So that can be also the thing. Sometimes when we have a little bit of a distance from a person, it's easier to sort of, you know, give a bit of food to needy people because we're not having to interact too much with them, a little bit, and that's easier than if we're having to deal with people who are sort of in our face all day, every day. So that can be a reason why also then for that phenomenon. So there can be other things as well, but maybe that's enough. Okay. Anything else? Okay. What I'd like to do now then is a meditation on these two, and then we're going to look at empathetic joy and equanimity meditation on those tomorrow. And with this meditation on loving kindness and compassion, We're going to also do it a little bit in stages. We're going to start with ourselves, someone close to us, and then move out from there. Maybe what I'll do actually is actually just do the meditation, and then maybe I'll... I think the meditation is fairly self-explanatory, so maybe we'll just do the meditation and then I want to comment a little bit about that practice and how it works, okay? So rather than explaining the practice, I think it's fairly self-explanatory. We can just go through the practice and then I'll explain the details and the practice afterwards. Okay, so let's do the practice. As an act of loving kindness for yourself, allow your awareness to descend into your body, filling the entire space of your body. Simply becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. Using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. Allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. With each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen, happily releasing them. Allowing the mind to come to rest in the present moment, Simply focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. Honglen is a Tibetan word meaning giving and taking. It's a very powerful method to transform our ordinary selfish attitude into an attitude of cherishing others. To transform our attachment and aversion into loving kindness and compassion. And we can begin by using this Tonglen method to cultivate loving kindness and compassion for ourselves. No matter how much mental afflictions, such as attachment and anger and jealousy and fear and anxiety, no matter how much of these mental afflictions are in our mind, they are simply like dirt covering the surface of our mind. And underneath all these mental afflictions is the natural purity of our mind. This inner purity of our mind is often called our Buddha nature, our potential to reach the highest goals imaginable. So imagine this deepest dimension of your own mind in the form of a small, white, radiant sphere of light in the center of your chest, at the level of your heart. And then arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if I were free of suffering and its causes. May I be free of all suffering and its causes. And then imagine your mental afflictions and your present and future suffering in the form of black smoke filling your body. And And then with each in-breath, imagine drawing that black smoke into the sphere of light at your heart, completely dissolving it there. So with each in-breath, breathe in with compassion, dissolving and extinguishing your mental afflictions and suffering at your heart. Dissolving it into your inner wisdom. Dissolving it into the purity of your mind. And then imagine now the black cloud is completely extinguished. And now you're completely free of all suffering and its causes, free of all mental afflictions. And take delight in this. And then arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if I had happiness and its causes. May I be truly well and happy. And then with each out-breath, imagine immeasurable rays of light radiating out from the sphere of light at your heart, filling and saturating your entire body and mind. Imagining the white light transforms into everything you need to be happy. So with each out-breath, breathe out the light of loving kindness, sending to yourself whatever you need to be happy. And then imagine now that you've found the genuine happiness that you seek. And take joy in this. And just as you wish to be happy and be free of suffering, so does everyone else. So next, bring to mind someone close to you, a loved one, who's currently experiencing some form of physical or mental problem or suffering. And imagine them very clearly in front of you. And then arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if they are free of that problem, free of that suffering. May you be free of all suffering and its causes. And then imagine their problem or suffering in the form of black smoke filling their body. And then with each in-breath, imagine drawing that black smoke out of their body and bringing it into the sphere of light at your heart, completely dissolving it there. So with each in-breath, breathe in with compassion, dissolving and extinguishing their suffering at your heart. And then imagine the black cloud is now completely extinguished. And now they're free of that problem or suffering. And take joy in this. And then arouse the thought, how wonderful it would be if they had happiness and its causes. May you be truly well and happy. And then with each out-breath, imagine immeasurable rays of light radiating out from the sphere of light of your heart, filling their entire body and mind, and transforming into everything they need to be happy. So with each out-breath, breathe out the light of loving kindness, sending to them whatever they need to be happy. And then imagine that they've now found the true happiness that is their heart's desire. And take delight in this. And then in conclusion, we can dedicate the positive potential that we've gathered from this meditation towards the goal of cultivating loving kindness and compassion towards ourselves and others. Any comments or questions about that practice? Oh, anger, okay. Often with those situations, it can be a few things. One, of course, is that, again, we are often projecting onto people and things, a lot of things, and often we don't realize what we're projecting. So it can be that something very simple we're projecting onto that, and that's irritating us and making us upset. But again, is the key element here is, again, the focus is if we are focusing on me, 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 and having the perspective of that situation is how is that situation affecting me, then typically we will probably react to unpleasant things, whether we're there or not, we just project, we'll probably react with this aversion or maybe anger or so forth. So one thing we can do in any situation is to not have this obsessive self-focus, but rather have a more broader focus. You know, have a focus of at least second person perspective. You know, that how is this person seeing this situation? Or even wider than that, third person perspective, like viewing from the outside this situation with both of us in there. So if we can adopt a much broader perspective rather than the perspective of how is this situation affecting me, I think a lot of these things will automatically dissipate. And what you will find is that instead of when we encounter a situation which for whatever reason maybe we don't really appreciate is having some irritating effect on us, some negative effect on us, rather than that happening, what we'll find is if we have this much broader perspective, if we enter into the situation and we somehow see that this person is not something not right, rather than having this sort of reactive aversion, we'll instinctively have more compassion for that person, seeing that something seems not right with that person, they're having some difficulties or problems. So that's one thing we can do. Secondly, often the case is, as I mentioned, in our modern society, we tend to either express or suppress in terms of our mental afflictions, you know, anger and so forth. And so anger is a classic that we either tend to express or often we then suppress if we don't like to express because we don't know how to deal with it. And often what happens is when if we do a lot of suppression of things, then we can feel it there, but we're sort of suppressing it, we're denying it. And so not only does that suppression cause a lot of physical problems in the body, but we often project a lot of negativity onto the people around us. And that particularly can be the case is if there is, you know, like maybe there's a certain person that sort of really irritates us, but they don't seem to irritate anyone else. Often this can be a sign that something in their appearance or something about them is reflecting something in us that we don't like about ourselves, that we're suppressing or denying. And so that's why we don't like to see that person or thing, because it's reminding us of something that we are denying within ourselves. So that's another thing that we can pay attention to, particularly if no one else seems to have this adverse effect when they see this person. It could be that we are really, that's just triggering something within us that we are denying or suppressing that we need to deal with. So these are two things that we can really work with. And then, of course, again, to avoid any sort of cognitive fusion as well. So I think there are certain things to avoid reacting to those situations where we don't obviously see there's some negative sort of behaviour. Yeah, so again, I think the key here is to not have this obsessive self-focus and to react to whatever the stimulus happens to be. So, again, one of the key elements here is to not, again, our instinctive reaction is if we feel there's something unpleasant, regardless of whether we understand what it is, we push against it with aversion. So this is something we can avoid in any situation. And if it's a difficult situation, even if we don't appreciate it, we can see that difficult situation as an opportunity rather than a problem. And then we can use that difficult situation as an opportunity for us to develop as a person. So we can actually, and this is one of the strengths of this particular approach to practicing Buddhism called Lojong, or mind training, which one of its great strengths is taking adverse conditions into the spiritual path, is to see any adverse condition, any unpleasant situation, as fuel for spiritual practice to help us to develop patience, compassion, and so forth. So I think this is how we can sort of deal with these situations in that way, rather than react to them, even if we don't really appreciate what's going on here. Yeah. Yeah. That we send the light to them.
Yeah.
The smoke, taking on, visualizing suffering as smoke and dissolving it. Yes.
And then what do you do with the smoke?
No, you dissolve it. So remember I said that there's this white light at the heart. This is our purity of our mind. And so when we breathe in the smoke, we dissolve it into the inner purity of our mind, so it gets completely dissolved.
Okay, but then you mentioned that it makes the form of whatever.
So that's the second part. The first part is if we are imagining someone in front of us who's had some suffering, we imagine their suffering as black smoke in their body, and then we use the in-breath to draw that out of their body and bringing it into this sphere of light at our heart and dissolving it there, extinguishing it. So we can keep doing that until we've managed to take all that smoke and suffering and it's completely dissolved. So that's compassion. That's the first part. The second part is then we wish them happiness. And so in the second part, we have then the white light here. We send out the white light to them, imagining that that white light transforms into everything they need to be happy. So that's the loving kindness of wishing them to be happy. So that's the second part. So the first part of compassion is taking the smoke and dissolving it. The second part is sending the white light and transforming it into anything they need to be happy. So that's the loving kindness part. Sure. Right. There's of course we need to practice acceptance, but acceptance doesn't mean resignation. We need to practice acceptance with ourselves and others. But that doesn't mean resignation. It doesn't mean I accept myself as I am, I'm not going to try and improve myself. That's not really acceptance. That's resignation. So acceptance is acknowledging our current condition, our current state, but on that basis, then, of course, working to improve, to decrease negativity, to increase positive qualities. Similarly, in terms of others, acceptance means to acknowledge this is the person how they are now. But that doesn't mean we don't try to help them to be improved, to reduce suffering and to achieve more happiness. So we need to be careful when we use this word acceptance, because often acceptance we use in terms of cognitive fusion. You know, oh, I have to accept that I'm just a bad person. That's me. No hope. I accept I'm a bad person. This is not acceptance. Acceptance is acknowledging, yes, at the moment I have a strong habit of getting angry. I accept that fact. But that doesn't mean we're stuck. So often when we start talking about acceptance, We often do that with this cognitive fusion, and then we just stuck. You know, that's me, that's them, they're just an angry person, I got to accept that, no hope of change. That's not acceptance. That's resignation. So that sort of acceptance is not really helpful. Okay. Anything else anyone would like to bring up? Yeah. Tong Len, yeah.
It's a Tibetan word, Tong Len. It literally means giving and taking. So taking means to take on the suffering and through compassion, and giving means to give with loving kindness. So this is the meditation we did is very much practiced within the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, and in Tibetan Buddhism it's called Tong Len meditation. So you probably hear that in certain places within the Tibetan tradition. Very widely practiced. Very powerful method for really developing loving kindness and compassion, and to overcome this selfish attitude, to transform that into the attitude of cherishing others. Oh, yeah, so there is another system of practice called Lojong. Which was introduced into Tibet by great Indian master Atisha. And so Lo is literally mind, and Jong can mean to train. So Lo Jong is mind training. And in mind training, it's a particular... of course we can say that all of Buddhist practice is mind training. You know, we're trying to train the mind. But this particular approach to practice, one of the great strengths of this practice is to be able to take adverse conditions into the spiritual path. That often, of course, if we're trying to follow some sort of spiritual path, we try to have conducive conditions for practice. But of course, we face a lot of obstacles and difficulties in our practice and in our life in general. And one of the great strengths of Lojong is to be able to see any of these difficult situations as not as a problem, but as an opportunity. So there's a lot of practical advice in this Lojong system of practice of how to see these difficult situations in our life as actually as opportunities, as actually fuel for spiritual practice. Yeah. On what, sorry?
Thought patterns.
Yeah. Okay. Of course, in Buddhist training, we're talking about transforming the mind. So I think in general in Buddhist texts, you don't see too much about physical illness in terms of the relationship there. So in certain areas, particularly in the area of Tantra, you may find something more about subtle energy work and so forth, but in general you don't see much relating to that. And in terms of using this practice, one of the concerns that sometimes people have is they think that, okay, if I'm doing this with someone who has some sort of particular illness, and I imagine taking that smoke of that illness into my heart, you know, maybe I'll get that sickness or illness. We can't do that, because this is a mental exercise. Of course, there are certain healing practices that involve energy work, and then of course at the energetic level there can be some movement of energies. But here we're really talking about a mental process, so we can't really take that illness from them. So there's no problem about us getting that sickness. But then when that's explained, people go, well, well, what's the point in the exercise if we can't actually take their illness from them? How can it work? The main reason for doing this practice, of course, is to improve or increase our loving kindness and compassion, to decrease our selfishness, to increase our attitude of cherishing others. So if we do this practice in a very heartfelt way, it means outside of the practice, we're more likely to help people in need, and we're more likely to help them in a more unselfish way. Because even now, sometimes when we help people close to us, we have a bit of a selfish motivation. You know what's best for you. You need to do what I tell you to do, rather than trying to help them for their sake. So this practice will help us to have a more pure motivation and will help us to start to even help people around us who normally we don't really help because, you know, we don't care so much about them. But at a very subtle level, I think we can have a direct positive impact on that person at the mental level. And this comes back to the idea of interdependency. And I think there is even some scientific evidence to support this, that if we are really doing this practice in a very heartfelt, authentic way with another person, even if they're on the other side of the planet, particularly if we have some connection with that person, I think we can have a direct, subtle, positive impact on that person's mind. So we shouldn't underestimate that possibility as well. So these are some of the things relating to this practice. Anything else? Okay, last question, then we take another break. Yeah. In terms of behaving equally.
Correct.
Yeah. Don't get so angry.
Yeah, they don't. They do not see people as bad and good people.
Wow.
They really cultivate habitually or even naturally quite, you know, compassion and
self-pity.
But I'm talking about the side of that. When you start coming back to a lot of people around you,
right,
you're constantly switching between the behaviors of the person and trying to have compassion. At the end of the day, sometimes
yeah, okay. So this goes comes back to the point where we talked about it, that when we talk about compassion, that always needs to be together with wisdom. In everything we do, we need wisdom and compassion together. Otherwise, we can get problems. If we only do this and we forget about wisdom, a number of things, of course, can happen. One is, of course, our compassion is very biased. You know, yes, I'll help these people because they're nice people, but I'm not going to help these people because they're nasty, horrible people. So we become very biased in our compassion. Also, of course, without wisdom, then we can have a very positive, pure motivation. But what we do doesn't help. It creates more suffering because we don't have understanding of how to help people. So we need the wisdom of what to do and how to help people. But also, of course, we need the wisdom, and this happens a lot with what you've explained, is people who have a lot of compassion, who want to go out and heal the world and fix the world. You know, we see this in aid workers and social workers. They go out full of enthusiasm, full of compassion. 6 months later, compassion burnout, completely burnt out. So that's another example of compassion without wisdom. The wisdom here, of course, is the wisdom understanding what we can do to help, what we can't do to help, and the wisdom of knowing when to rest and look after ourselves. Because if we don't rest and look after ourselves, we're not going to be help to anyone. Because sometimes people feel that if they're being compassionate, if they do anything for themselves, they're being selfish.
So they actually don't do anything for themselves. They overextend themselves. They don't rest and so forth. This is a lack of wisdom. Because if we don't take care of ourselves, we can't help others. So this is another example of compassion without the wisdom. And another example we've probably all experienced many times is we try to help someone and then they take advantage of us. They walk over the top of us. So this is also compassion with no wisdom. The wisdom here, of course, is the wisdom of not allowing that to happen. Because if we allow people to take advantage of our compassionate activities, we're in some ways encouraging them to behave badly. So that's not very compassionate, if we're encouraging them to behave badly in that way. So therefore, we need the wisdom of not allowing that to happen. We need to be very firm about that situation. If they're trying to take advantage of us, we must not allow that to happen. That is really the compassionate thing to do for them. So these are all examples of how, if we don't incorporate wisdom into the compassion, we can have difficulties and problems. So again, with your direct question is, if we really want to be compassionate and help others, we need to look after ourselves as well. So we need to take care of ourselves, we need to rest when we're tired, we need to not overextend ourselves, and we need to know how we can help and how we can't help that person. These are all things that are going to be important with compassion.
Right. So, exactly. So, if we can, through our wisdom, we can understand that if we go into this situation, we are only going to get overwhelmed in a negative way, then no point in going into that situation. You know, maybe for some of us there are certain situations or certain people, whenever we go into that situation, we always get overwhelmed in a negative way. Then there's no use in the short term to keep going into that situation because we're just having a negative impact on ourselves and others. So the wise decision would be to, like yourself, give yourself a little bit of distance from that situation while you work on yourself, strengthen yourself, so that later you can enter into that difficult situation and help that person in some way. So of course we're not talking about running away, we're talking about a strategic approach in the short term. Of course, when we talk about giving ourselves a bit of distance, we're talking about physical distance, keeping them close to our heart at all times, of course. Okay, let's break there. And again, we'll take half an hour break and we'll come back at 5:15. And then we'll go back into the mindfulness training at the nostrils, one more session before dinner. So let's take another break.